Thank you, Ambassador and Chair, and thanks for inviting us to this panel as well. Delegates and civil society partners, indeed, this is a very central question. And as has already been said, as we meet today, we are in the context of more than 100 million people globally being displaced. And we know also the vast majority are women and children. And we know that as conflict and disasters rise, so too does gender-based violence. So we are facing a protection crisis that is truly brutal, and we can't continue to leave women behind and children. As had been mentioned by colleagues already, this is the same pattern from Haiti to Ukraine, Afghanistan, Syria, Sudan and Yemen, the Horn of Africa, Sahel, DRC. Millions of people are facing armed conflicts and armed groups. And we know, again, that in the situations of armed conflict and natural disaster, the risk of violence, exploitation, and abuse is heightened. The needs are growing all over the globe, and our ability to respond is being tested to the limits. We're talking about breakdown of social fabric of community, and communities actually leave them at increased risk to other forms of violence. Also been mentioned already that climate change is forcing more and more people from their homes, exposing women and girls to additional risks such as unsafe coping practices and creating further barriers to accessing services. In fact, climate change amplifies and accelerates pre-existing gender inequalities which affect women and girls' ability to adapt or recover from a climate-induced emergency. And this link was actually until recently given very little attention, but we do have growing evidence that shows that extreme weather events are driving gender-based violence. In Somalia, we have witnessed a 20% increase in reported rape cases in drought-impacted communities. In Kenya, there's been a 60% increase in reported intimate partner violence in countries with severe weather events. When women and girls face food insecurity and poverty, they're the last to eat, and they eat the least. And this has huge impacts on their health and well-being. They also have to travel further and further in search of food and water, placing them in increased danger. At the same time, with the global pushback on the rights as well. So what do we need to do? Basically, there are two, we know it already, two basic ways to address this. First of all, to integrate the protection of women and girls, the rights, in the immediate response, actually from the beginning. And then secondly, on the funding. Let me elaborate a bit on both of these two elements. Given what we know, all gender-based violence cannot longer be seen in isolation from other humanitarian needs. All survivors have the right to life savings assistance, and this includes access to case management, post-rape, medical treatment, mental health and psychosocial support, as was also mentioned by Ted, livelihood support, legal assistance, and cash and voucher assistance. We must respond with urgency and compassion, hand in hand with communities and local women's groups, and we must also work at the policy and the political level. We really need to pull together for a response centered on the needs and wishes of the survivor, and also to press for the prosecution or perpetrators. And we have actually taken significant strides forward to ensure that gender-based violence is considered a collective responsibility for all humanitarian partners right from the start of an emergency response. The needs are now included. The GBV needs are included in humanitarian needs, overviews and response plans. But, and this is my second point, this is not being matched by the necessary levels of funding. Today, just over 4% of gender-based violence funding required for 2023 has been mobilized and received. And while we know there's a widening gap between humanitarian needs and available funding overall across all sectors, this gap is most extreme when it comes to the gender-based violence services for victims. This lack of funding implies also a lack of prioritization, and it has serious consequences. It means that over 100 million people are without any chance of receiving the protection support, and it also means that mechanisms and programs are not in place to prevent and mitigate gender-based violence, even in a context where we know that the risks are extreme. As the lead agency of gender-based violence coordinator in emergencies, UNFPA works in particular closely with local women's organizations. They know best the situation and the solutions, the risk, and how to address them. They are the frontline responders when crisis strikes, as we see in the crisis in Sudan. In UNFPA, we provide 40% of